political strategist Timmy Teeple. He's a young man on the move, and for the last many years, he's best known as the political strategist for Governor Bobby Jindal. But Timmy Teeple is active both in Louisiana and around the country with his company On Message. Before we get to the politics, I don't know that many are familiar with your backstory. I'm sure some people are to some degree, but you have six kids, right?
I do.
And they're named after states.
The girls are.
Yes.
The boys are named after their grandfathers.
All right. So the boys are?
William and Thomas.
William and Thomas. And I know your dad well, Tommy, who's a big executive at Lamar.
That's right.
But the girls?
Virginia Lee, Montana Blaze, Georgia Bell, and Tennessee Sky.
And how did that come about?
Well, we didn't plan it. My wife is from Virginia. We got married in Virginia. We love the name Virginia, so first daughter's named Virginia. Then we really liked the name Georgia, named the second daughter Georgia, and after that it felt like we just had to stick with it.
So four.
So we had four.
Four girls, four states.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an active guy, but that also carries into another realm of your life. I think you were in 15 triathlons last year.
That's right.
So you're in good shape. How do you work out with your busy schedule?
Well, you know, the thing about triathlons, you have running and biking and swimming. I grew up swimming, and so that's not something I need to practice as much. But when you're traveling, you can always find a hotel bike or a place to run. And so it's a nice sport to stay active, and it's very complimentary to a traveling lifestyle.
And you took some time out from your workout schedule to be with us. In fact, I think you've got a triathlon this week.
That's right, in Eunice. It's the Zydeco Triathlon. It's the first one of the triathlon season. It's a super sprint series at LSUE.
At LSUE. And then after that?
New Roads. The Louisiana Triathlon is 2 weeks in New Roads. Then 2 weeks after that, there's the Crawfish Man. And then there's the Escape from Alcatraz triathlon.
Well, I'm amazed that so many people in our line of work, mine and yours, take so little time to take care of themselves because it's a high-stress occupation. And members of Congress who have access to all that great workout equipment, not many of them take advantage of it either.
That's right. And they have a great gym at Congress. I see you most of the time at the Spectrum.
I do. I go there out of necessity, but I've never done a triathlon, so I commend you for doing it. And some believe also that fiscal discipline starts with physical discipline. So congratulations, Timmy Teeple. But as I stated, you're best known for handling Governor Bobby Jindal and his two quests for governor that were successful as far as the electoral process and in his 8 years as governor. Received some plaudits and some criticism. What's your take on his two terms? What do you think he accomplished, and what did he did not get done that you wanted to accomplish?
Well, you know, Bobby came into office in 2000 and ran in 2007, came into office in 2008. At the time he won, we were still at the beginning stages of recovering from Katrina. For 20 years, up until Governor Jindal's election, Louisiana had more people leave the state than come to the state. And so when he ran, what he ran on is, I'm going to create jobs so that our kids can find a good-paying job and raise a family right here in Louisiana. We don't want grandparents have to get on a plane to go see their grandchildren anymore. We need to have the sort of economy here that people can find work. So I think that was his focus. His focus was job creation. That meant keeping taxes low. Obviously, when you keep taxes low, that means you have to reduce the size of government. There's only so much government you can pay for. So I think looking back at Bobby's 8 years, I think after 8 years, Louisiana's economy was bigger and the government was smaller. For 8 years, and when he was in office, you had more people coming to the state than leaving the state. We had, at the end of his term, we had over 2 million people working in Louisiana. We had higher GDP than we've ever had. We had a bigger economy than we ever had. We had more people working than we ever had. We had more people living here than we ever had. We had higher exports than we ever had in our history. Now, those are all marks on, you know, the economy of Louisiana. And if you grade Governor Jindal's term in terms of what he did for job creation and the economy, he gets very high marks. I think that you see a number of people will say, well, but you had all these cuts in government. And
higher education in particular.
Higher education. You know, he never cut tops, but higher education, health care. You know, the health care thing is interesting. When you have, lack of revenue, when you have these issues, it becomes an opportunity to say, how are we doing, how are we delivering services, and are there better ways to deliver services? I remember, I think it was in 2010, maybe 11, but when we got word that the federal government was going to reduce our Medicaid rates from, I believe, 67% to 63%, it was going to cause a $1.3 billion drop in our revenues from the feds over the course of 5 quarters, a year and 3 months. So we had to figure out how to reduce our health care spend by $1.3 billion immediately. And that happened after session, so we didn't even have time to go into session and work with folks on it. We just had to do it. And that led us to figure out how to do the privatize the charity hospitals. We were either going to have to shut down charity hospitals or we had to reform them. And through privatizing, I saw just recently, you know, Lauren Scott did a study that said that the privatization of these hospitals saved over $2.7 billion. Now, that's $2.7 billion that goes right into the economy. It goes right into families' wallets and their banking account. It goes right into creating more jobs. And so that never would have happened if we hadn't have had that $1.3 billion shortfall caused by, you know, the change in Medicaid rates. And so I think that it's important with the way we looked at it when we had these drops in revenue is how do we reform government service? The easy answer would be let's just go take more money from families. Let's go take more money from businesses. Let's take more money out of the economy. But if you take money out of the economy, then the economy's getting smaller and government's getting bigger. And what we wanted to do was make the economy bigger and the government smaller.
All right. How much of a distraction was it that he wanted to be president? He seemed to be ramping up to run for president from the day he became governor.
I think that that is a misconception. He was not confident about running for president until shortly before he announced. Now, I think that the decisions he made in office, he would have made whether he was going to run for president or not. I think a number of people say, well, why didn't he raise taxes? He didn't raise taxes because he wanted to be president. Well, that's not true. When he ran for governor, he said, I'm not going to raise taxes because, you know, as Ronald Reagan says, if you want more of something, don't tax it. If you want less of it, tax it.
I remember in 86, after 6 years, Reagan raised taxes, and the governor, he raised a few taxes in his final year.
Yeah, we had a tax swap, you can call it that, where we raised some and lower others. But that comes along with tax reform and the big tax reform package he put out. He wanted to, you know, change the way we were collecting taxes, but not increase the burden. But if you look at over the course of his term, you know, taxes stayed low. And that was driven by his belief that the number one thing he needed to do was enable the economy to create jobs. And raising taxes would hurt the economy. And he wanted to create jobs because that was going to be what's most important to the state of Louisiana. I guess the other issue that people would argue with is Medicaid expansion. That was politically driven. But, you know, Governor Jindal is a man who understands healthcare policy. He understands that the closer you get to a single-payer system, to a government pay-run system in healthcare, the more harmful it is to patients and doctors being able to make those choices. And so, you know, he had a philosophical view on Medicaid expansion. He had a philosophical view on taxes. And so I don't think any of those decisions were impacted by political factors. It was philosophical.
We're about 30 seconds from going to a break, Timmy, but there are those also who say the governor would not do anything to inflame Grover Norquist. Is that fair?
No, I don't think that's fair. He was against taxes because he believed taxes would hurt our economic well-being, and he wanted to create jobs and create prosperity, and you don't do that by taking money from people.
Timmy Tipple, that some have the perception that Bobby Jindal was your only client. It wasn't true then. It's certainly not true now. What have you done since the governor left office 15 and a half months ago?
Well, you know, I left. I was Bobby's chief of staff his first couple of years in office. In 2011, I joined On Message, so I've been there 6 years. We have offices in Annapolis, Maryland, Alexandria, Virginia, and I'm here in Louisiana, which requires a lot of traveling, but I enjoy raising my family here. You know, On Message, if you look over the past decade, only seven Democrat U.S. senators have been beaten by a Republican candidate, and four of those seven were beaten by our clients. If you look at governor's races, we've won 12 different governor's races in nine different states. We've done a number of congressional races around the country, as well as lower statewide races, attorney generals and lieutenant governors and things like that. So very active in just about every state and really enjoy the opportunity to be able to work around the country. It's always I enjoy doing work in Louisiana, but I try to do as little of it as possible.
All right, 877-217-5757. We're going to the phone lines in just a moment. But how is it as a Republican political consultant working in the age of Donald Trump?
Wow. You know, you think you've seen everything in politics, and then 2016 comes along, and it just upends everything. It's different world now. I don't think we are – I think that 2018 is going to be a much different midterm election than people are used to. You know, I think if you had elections right now, I don't think anything really has changed since 2016 when Donald Trump won. You know, you look at these special elections, they seem to be trending along the same lines of Donald Trump's victories. I think the country is extremely polarized. I think that the media, people aren't tuning in or listening to the media. They have defense mechanism up where they're very suspicious, and folks have burrowed into their foxholes and into their camps and slugging it out.
And we're finding a lot of that in Louisiana right now.
Yes, that's for sure.
297-5633, talk at talklouisiana.org, and Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Good morning, Charlotte. You're on the air with Timmy Tipple.
Hello, Jim. Thank you for allowing me to contribute. My question is, when Timmy Tipple mentioned the economic progress during the Jindal administration here in Louisiana, and he cited the different metrics, did he take into consideration the inflation so that we could have the same base of previous dollars?
All right. Yeah, you said the economy grew. Well, the economy is likely to grow, but did it grow above inflation?
Yes, it did.
So the governor's mission, headed by Stephen Moray, was to have economic development. There were hits and misses. What were the? Give me a big hit and a big miss.
Oh boy, you know, I think that if you look at the different regions, you know, in Lake Charles, you had a number of big hits. Manufacturing, you had a number of big hits, and petrochemical refineries and steel. You know, I think that Moray wanted to diversify the economy as well. And so looking at, you know, digital and bringing in some of the more higher tech jobs. In terms of, I think Nucor was a major victory in the first term. You know, we had the previous administration, we had lost a big steel plant, ThyssenKrupp. That we had pursued, and Nucor was a hot prospect that a number of states were pursuing, and so to be able to beat out the other states and win that was strong. But we had a number of wins. After a while, it felt like every week you were seeing press releases on two, mm-hmm. three new victories.
And there was a lot of money dedicated to that, and it paid off in some cases. But there were also times when you, I know of a few, where you tried hard and you lost.
That's right.
Can you name one?
I try to forget the losses.
But there were a few of those.
There were a few. A company that was looking at building new cars. There was, I remember when GM shut down the plant up there. That was a big loss. We had a loss that turned into a victory was when Pilgrim's Pride was shutting down the chicken processing plant up in Farmerville. And we're going to lay off 300 people, and we were able to convince them to sell that facility to trying to think of the name of the farm out in California, but they came in and bought it and put everyone back to work. So
how's it doing now?
It's doing well. Doing well. It's been growing.
Okay. A question from a listener about the repeal of the Stelly plan. That was in the first year of the governor, and I remember it was an unusual coalition of Republicans on the far right and Democrats who may have been up to some mischief to try to put the governor on the spot. And I think many of them thought that he would veto it, and he didn't. He signed off, and he ultimately took credit for it. But in retrospect, did that cause a lot of the budget grief that you faced over those 8 years?
Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, it cut revenue by $400 million a year. And when that first came up, we had concerns about it. We had concerns about the amount of revenues that it would drop. We met with, I think it was Buddy Shaw was the senator that was the author of that bill, and the Senate president and some others, and said, all right, can we look at phasing it in? Can we look at, people were gung-ho, no, we have to repeal it. Even went so far as to do a tick, call through the legislators, see if a veto could be sustained. And no, couldn't. The votes in the legislature were that overwhelming to get rid of it that the votes were there to override any veto. And so, I say in politics, before the inevitable.
Well, in the first year, you're kind of feeling your way, and I think the current governor is finding some of that in his second year. But at that point, was there a way, in retrospect, you should have killed it in committee?
There was none. If you remember, there was we got some flack for one of our fiscal division administration folks going out and testifying that what this would cost, the votes were there. People wanted to get rid of it. You're right. It was a combination of conservatives who believed in it and Democrats who thought it was funny. I shouldn't say Democrats, liberals who thought this would just put us in a pickle and eventually would force the governor to raise taxes. And he told them at the time, guys, we're not raising taxes. So this is serious. But like I said, we counted the votes and, the governor, you have to count votes. And if the votes are there to override the governor, then it's happening no matter what.
So he signed it, and then he did what a good politician would do. He took credit for cutting taxes.
Absolutely.
And the perception, though, is that this could have been avoided. But you're saying that's a false conclusion.
I think it's a false conclusion. I think that... there are, the legislature has a lot of say in this. I mean, they're an equal branch of government. And if they say this is what we're going to do, then at that point we knew we had to figure out a way to make it work.
877-217-5757, Rich at the airport. Good afternoon, Rich. You're on the air with Timmy Teeple. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fine.
Great. I think the term is alternative fat that I feel... I've been hearing this morning. I'm not necessarily as abreast on the numbers as you guys may be, but just a couple things that I noticed. from Jindal's term, I guess you'd say. I went to Kaiser Chi in Midtown. I graduated not a super long time ago, but a long time ago, I guess you'd say. One of the jokes that we always had was, I remember when we first found out about the deficit that Louisiana was in, or, you know, while keeping track, they managed to find a lot of money to rebuild that school, basically from the ground up, because, you know, I'd see it going back to my alma mater for different things. At the same time, taking a lot of other money from programs just in education. That was just one thing. Also, another thing to jump over to, I heard you say earlier that Bobby Jindal's decision-making was not indicative of him deciding to run for office. I'll tell you what, watching, you know, the things that he was doing at the time he was in office, before he announced it, I felt, I was like, man, this guy looks like he's trying to run for president or be somebody's vice presidential candidate, just, you know, super against anything Obama was doing. I remember one time a while ago, we were supposed to get a grand or $2,000 back off of a tax break or whatever it was. It was free money, you know?
All right. All right. You've given him a lot to work with. I appreciate your call, Rich, but obviously Rich speaks for a lot of people who feel the governor didn't do as well as many thought he would.
Well, and I think you made 3 points there, Rich, and I'll see if I can hit them all on, you know, money being invested into buildings. That is true. Governor Jindal, on the higher ed front, invested over $1 billion in capital in infrastructure and buildings, and that was something that was important to him. I'm not sure about the $2,000 tax cut. I don't think he rejected any tax cuts, but I would say that if it was a issue dealing with free money, I don't know if there's any such thing as free money. When it comes to the idea that, you know, he was always angling for president or vice president, I will say this, that, you know, there came a time early in his administration, in 2008, I remember that presidential election, John McCain folks called up and asked if he'd be willing to go through the vetting process, that he was on the short list for vice president, that if he would go through the vetting process for that. I don't know if that's been public before, but and we had a discussion about it. Should you go through the vetting process?
This was the first year of his term.
It was 2008. And of course, what we knew was if you go through the vetting process and then he picks you, you can't say no at that point, right? And so Senator McCain had come down to Louisiana, toured New Orleans. Bobby had spent the day with him. He had gone out to Sedona. He had invited him out to Sedona with a handful of other folks to Senator McCain's ranch out there, vacation home, and spent the weekend. I think it was a Memorial Day weekend. And I remember at that time, Governor Jindal said, you know, growing up, I always wanted to be governor of Louisiana, didn't have the same feeling about being president or vice president, but I always wanted to be governor of Louisiana because, you know, you got to remember, he grew up in the 80s. All of his friends left because of the oil boom then, the oil bust. And so he always thought we got to create a diverse economy, create jobs so that our friends don't have to leave. And so he turned down Senator McCain, the idea of going through the vetting process. And so I, you know, I understand that there's this perception out there because of his, you know, the fact that he did end up running later. But I just disagree that this was somehow a, you know, pre-met, because I, you know, I was there. I had these conversations with him. He grew up, he always wanted to be governor. But, you know, he couldn't say the same thing about
him. Well, he was head of the University of Louisiana system before he became governor. And I'm sure he didn't want to cut higher education, but he did. And it's been cut under the current governor as well. What do you think that has done to the, what has it done to the state, the cuts that higher ed has received over the last decade?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's, if you look across the country, you know, post 2008, we had the Great Recession in 2008, the nation did, states across the country were reducing the amount of direct funding to higher education. you know, we had some issues in Louisiana in terms of needing to reform. Mm-hmm. Our graduation rates were a lot lower than other states. And so we had a much higher percentage of students graduating, going into four-year universities, and then dropping out rather than pursuing, you know, community mm-hmm. college two-year tech degrees. You know, we had a university, we still do, that have 6% graduation rates. You know, I mean, that's amazing. You know, that – so, you know, I think that
– But LSU, for example, got cut hard. And I can tell you that – the governor remains popular in some quarters, and people would vote for him again, but I doubt that he would get many votes from professors and others who work at Louisiana State University.
Yes.
And many of those people voted for him the first time and maybe even voted for him two or three times, but they quite likely wouldn't vote for him now. Why do you think there is this palpable dislike for the Jindal years on the flagship university campus?
I think that in the final 2 years, you had a number of, as you're reducing the budget, when he ran for president, announced his campaign, when you run for president, your numbers drop at home. You know, you look at every candidate who ran, that's what happens. I think people felt like he's not focused on the state, and it causes a drop in the polls. So I think that, if you look through the first 6 years, numbers stayed pretty high. I think that we face the same issues in terms of needing to reform, you know, needing to figure out how to make do with the money we have. But I think the campaign for president caused, you know, his numbers to take a beating here at home. People felt like he wasn't minding the store. I don't think that, from my perspective, not fair, but I think it's accurate that's a perception that people have. I think that if you look at LSU, the flagship university, one of the things we first did was the Grad Act. And this idea was that universities should be rewarded for the graduation rates. If they hit their target graduation rates, they should receive more funds and more flexibility. Universities wanted more flexibility in tuition, so they can increase tuition. And the state wanted more bang for the buck, which was higher graduation rates for, you know, mm-hmm. the money we're spending to put people through. And so we were able to negotiate a grand compromise where you raise your graduation rates, you get more flexibility in tuition. I think that LSU benefits from that. I think that LSU received a lot of money in terms of capital, you know, infrastructure projects. I think that TOPS tuition scholarships, I think, help LSU out the most. Most of the top students go to LSU, right? And so I think cuts in TOPS are going to hurt LSU. We always fully funded TOPS. So anyway.
All right. Well, the governor is 45 years old, be 46 in June, still a relatively young man. Will he run for office again?
I don't think so. I don't think
ever.
So. I don't know. It's hard to, you know, say never, never, never. I mean, the guy's 46. I think he really does enjoy private sector. I think he enjoys, spending time with his family. He does enjoy policy quite a bit, but I don't know if he's... you know, like I said, you never want to say never, but he's not actively thinking about it.
Would he work for President Trump?
There was talk early on about during transition about him being HHS secretary and something like that. I think that he's enjoying the private sector right now. I think, he was in government service for
a long time.
Long time.
Most of his life.
10, 11, 12 years on the elected side and then before that.
Mm-hmm. What is his perception about his successor?
I can give you my perception.
Okay. Well, that's good enough since he's not here.
Yeah, he's
and
not
I imagine
here, right?
There are some similarities. But
yeah,
what about
John
Bell Edwards?
I will say this, that he has made a purposeful decision to not try to second guess the current governor. He wants to stay out of his way, give him a chance to address issues the way he sees fit, the way the voters elected him to do it. And that was something that Governor Blanco afforded to Bobby when he was elected. And so he wants to provide some room and space for Governor Edwards to do what he needs to do.
But the governor, like Bobby Jindal this week, found that presenting an ambitious tax overhaul plan is a tough sell.
Tax reform is tough. I mean, it is tough. There's so many moving parts. There's so many people impacted. It is very hard. I think that one of the things about the governor, the role of the governor, is I think you need to always be innovative. You need to be bringing ideas. And not every idea you bring will the legislature will like. But that doesn't mean you quit bringing ideas. You have to keep bringing ideas. And at whatever point you step away from the negotiating table and say, I'm done bringing new ideas, y'all figure it out, that's a problem for the entire state.
Well, Timmy Teeple, it's been a pleasure. Hope you'll do this again. Thanks for joining us today.